Good afternoon, Tucson. You're listening to The Buckmaster Show on 1030 The Voice, KVOI. I'm Dylan Smith, editor and publisher at the Tucson Sentinel. I'm sitting in for Bill, who's just starting a very much deserved vacation. So thank you for joining us. Joining us as well here in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio is a new face, an old face, a familiar face on the Tucson City Council. Yet again, Councilwoman Karen Ulick, who is now representing Ward 6. Not Ward 3, as you did for quite a while.
That's right. Thanks, Dylan, for having me on.
Absolutely. And also here in the studio is Jim Ninsel, one of our reporters at the Tucson Sentinel, who Buckmaster Show listeners will be quite familiar with as well. So, Karen, tell us a little bit about how you're back on the council. How'd this happen?
Well, the mayor and council followed the city charter and held a sort of an application process, if you will, because it's up to them to appoint the next person to succeed someone who vacates their seat. And mm-hmm. so we went through that process and took me, you know, a little while to decide whether I would add any kind of value by tossing my name in the ring. And not only because of my experience, but the fact that I'm not going to run for office and that we have a new city manager, I just took all of that into account and thought, well, let the process unfold, but I'd like to offer my service.
So you are now on the council in from Midtown, Ward 6,
yeah.
the seat that was left vacant when Steve Kosacek stepped down to go work for the county last month, at the end of the month before, I guess, end of March. And this is the second time you have put yourself forward to be appointed and be back on the council.
Right, right. And I view it differently when you, I mean, when I was appointed, when Paul Durham left his seat, that interim service felt different to me. I feel a real commitment to seeing through the work that Councilmember Kosacek and his team started, because it was rooted in the needs of the ward and the mm-hmm. neighborhoods. And so that's really the first order of business. And the same was true of Councilmember Durham. He had started some things that weren't quite wrapped up, and you can't assume things will get wrapped up unless you really track them and follow them through. So that's really the first focus. And then we'll see if there's bandwidth to add anything of value beyond that.
At least publicly, Kosacek didn't really express a preference for who would be appointed to take the seat, but he did say that he wanted to have his staff kept on. Is that council office staff going to stick around?
Yeah, I actually met with them before the final round of interviews to ask them whether they would serve alongside me, and they've committed to do that. They're really well respected and appreciated, and so I'm really glad that they're sticking around.
And that would be, well, at least for you, your term will end at the end of 2025, next year.
Right.
Jim Ninsel.
You're kind of the Billy Martin of the Tucson City Council.
I don't know who Billy Martin is. Is that awful? It's the sports manager?
It's a Yankees coach. Came and went.
Yankees. Forget it. Talk to me about the Detroit Tigers and I'll listen.
All right. We'll see if we can. Let's switch gears altogether. The exciting night on the University of Arizona campus last night. Our reporter, Paul Ingram, was out there and got a little dose of the tear gas that was being used as police moved in to remove the protest camp that had sprung up. Your thoughts, do you think the police were, do you have any heartburn over the police action there?
You know, I haven't spoken with Chief Kazmar yet regarding TPD's involvement last night. What I read actually in your own coverage was that I know the sheriff, the state troopers, the regional SWAT team, UAPD were there. So I don't have the details in terms of TPD's involvement. I think that it's unfortunate. Dylan and I were talking just before this program that the university hasn't come up with a way of designating a visible area for protesters to be able to voice their concerns and proceed with, you know, safety for everybody and the processions that'll be happening starting this evening. But I just don't have enough detail. I don't know anybody in Tucson who wouldn't be pained by an escalation, quite frankly, including the officers who are involved. Nobody wants to see that kind of escalation, and I think it's tragic.
I would want to kind of shift gears because I know your background is really in helping people with housing, people in poverty, try to move out of poverty, and that's certainly a huge challenge here in Tucson, particularly when it comes to housing.
Yeah.
We've seen some pretty dramatic changes in the cost of housing. As somebody who has followed this as long as you have, what do you see as sort of the root causes that has caused such a dramatic increase in home values and rents and that we've seen in recent years?
Well, I definitely think that folks don't have the money that keeps pace with the rising cost of housing. That's pretty simple. And I also think that while the city, I think, is really doing a great job with other partners of ramping up the production of standard housing models, I'm just not sure that that's going to get us the range of price points that are really needed, including incredibly affordable housing. And I've mentioned this before that, you know, there are models out there like shared housing, often for seniors, co-housing, co-op apartments, tiny homes. I think we are going to need to innovate and really expand. And I know the city in its own plans is looking at this, right? That's going to be really essential to bring a wider mix of options to people because there are just far too many people hurting out there.
Are you seeing a lot more investment in homes by people who are then going to rent them out and then increase those rents? That's always been something that's happened in Tucson. I own a couple of properties I rent out. And I'm just wondering if that's one of the things, and Airbnbs as well, that is driving the kind of a scarcity issue.
Yeah, you know, I haven't seen enough data to really know how much that's driving things. I do know that we've always been concerned about folks coming in and buying up houses as investments and then maximizing through high rents or high sales prices and things like that. I haven't looked at recent data to see how much that's driving it. I know that when we adopted the ADU ordinance to allow homeowners to build ancillary housing on site for family members, et cetera, to me, that could be a real part of the solution, to allow homeowners to bring family or even friends, others, to live on their property with them. I'm not opposed to Airbnbs either, because that's supplemental income that helps people hold on to their housing. I think it just needs to be respectful of the character and the quiet in the surrounding neighborhood and managed well.
We did, the city did, as you mentioned, adopt that ADU ordinance, the guest house, casita zoning, being a little bit more flexible and getting especially standard models of, you know, those ancillary dwellings through permitted. Are you in favor of even more flexible zoning? You mentioned tiny houses, things like that, making it a little bit more possible to get that kind of development through?
You know, I am, and I know that it's a tough needle to thread, and we went through it when we dealt with group mini dorms, right? Mm-hmm. Where we actually we defined group dwellings to accommodate no more than four unrelated individuals. And as a lesbian, you can imagine my pain at trying to define what a family is and how many unquote related folks. So it was the only way we could get at it. And we need to be sure that we do no harm when we try and figure out how to thread the needle. But I am in favor of it. I think that there are some nonprofits out there serving youth aging out of foster care and other folks where those models are absolutely perfect. And those folks need a place to live.
And you mentioned the, you know, character of a neighborhood and not changing things up too quickly, right? Like, what makes a certain place more appropriate for a more flexible kind of, you know, development?
Yeah. Well, I, you know, it's challenging because the character of downtown, especially in the city core, mm-hmm. is evolving. I mean, and it's much denser. And there is transit to accommodate and help with that density. And so I have mixed feelings about it and mixed thoughts about it. On the one hand, it is a changing landscape. And for folks living in the downtown, I think it's reasonable to expect, and it's already happened, there's a lot more activity, and yep. there's a lot more happening,
downtown,
and there's
Fourth
a lot
Avenue,
more people. Having said that, we can't just be callous, and you know, we have to be thoughtful in how we look at each kind of area mm-hmm. of the city and where it's where different types of housing might be well placed.
That brings to mind maybe a little bit broader question. As we mentioned, you're representing a different ward mm-hmm. now than you used mm-hmm. to, and it you know has a different sorts of residents, slightly different neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. How are you going to change your approach to represent those constituents versus how you represented folks in Ward 3 in the Northwest Side, your former ward?
I think it's really key to listen. I mean, as you know, once you're elected to the city council, you serve citywide. Mm-hmm. And of course, I listed a number of issues like saving Barnum Hill for public access, which is in Ward 6. Lots of the Rio Nuevo and downtown development work. So I think I gained familiarity with some aspects of the ward and many people in the ward. But I definitely need to take time to make sure that I'm familiar and the doors open for those residents and constituents to be heard.
And you have, in fact, been a resident of the ward yourself for a while.
Yeah.
Now, there was as part of the jockeying for position for who would get this appointment, there was a lot of talk about you supposedly not being a resident.
Yeah, and you know, I have to appreciate the folks who raised it because they're researchers and they drill down on some data points, right? If they had drilled one more level, they would have realized that that their concerns weren't actually valid. But yes, I have been a resident, and the assessor's record right now is inaccurate, in fact, about a place.
The property you own in Ward 3.
The property I own, but if you drill down one more level, you see that that's yeah. based on an older closing document from August. So anyway, the point being, number one, due diligence is appropriate. And being called to task on those kinds of things. And I have been and will continue to be a resident of Ward 6.
You're signing on just in time for that grant, next stage of the Grant Road expansion to get underway. Are you familiar? I don't want to sandbag you here, so I don't know how familiar.
No.
I know you've worked on it. Other segments previously with
yeah,
Ward 3.
I mean, I'll be honest with you. I did see that it was announced that next stretch on the eastern part of the corridor, but I'm not up to speed on it. And quite frankly, I don't think we're done yet with the west part of the corridor that is abutting Samos and Jefferson Park, because we did put a greenway in there to help mitigate, but there are some pieces maybe that haven't quite met the point, and there's a choking point now too that I've heard residents are concerned about. So I've got the experience, and I just need to study up on that eastern part, which is more commercialized, I think. But yeah, we're gonna have to just take it as best we can and deal with that.
And RTA Next yeah. is on the agenda, and yeah. the possibility of a sales tax by a question by the city of Tucson, which I think a decision has to be made on relatively soon
yeah.
if you're going for an August yeah. election.
A July election.
July, even. You're right. You're right. They moved that primary date.
Right.
What obviously a lot needs to be worked out with RTA Next and the city's has city council members have concern about where they want to participate. But what are your general thoughts on another 20 years of the RTA?
I wrote an op-ed in 2021 when I was serving in the council member Durham seat, expressing concern because it just seemed like the legitimate concerns of city residents were not being understood and integrated into the RTA Next plan. I don't feel like that's changed, and I remain concerned about entering into an RTA Next as it stands. It just doesn't pencil out for residents, and we have a responsibility to be the voice of Tucson at that table. And so I'm not real hopeful at this point.
So you think the city would be better off going it alone and not participating in the regional effort of that?
We've got a lot of regional efforts, but this one may have run its course, and it might be time to just continue to focus on other regional collaborations.
We can dig into that issue and a whole lot more right after these messages from some fine Buckmaster Show sponsors. Right now, I need to tell you folks that this portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Mona's is located on the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. They're open Tuesday through Sunday for breakfast and lunch. You can treat yourself to their mouthwatering pastries, including that famous Danish Kringle. MonasDanishBakery.com or BuckmasterShow.com for a link to Mona's Danish Bakery. We will be right back.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com. Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show here on KVOI 1030 The Voice. I'm Dylan Smith of the Tucson Sentinel, sitting in for Bill, who's starting a much-deserved vacation Joining me here in the Green Things Zogolo Village studio is a brand new Ward 6 council member, Karen Ulick, who is also had a little bit of experience with the Tucson City Council. And also our Tucson Sentinel government and political impact reporter, Jim Ninsel, is here in the studio with us. And we're running down some of the current issues of the day. We were discussing a little bit about RTA Next and the potential for a city sales tax election at the end of July, part of the July election, that could maybe fund roads. Are we, like, past the at least the realistic deadline to put language on the ballot? Before you were appointed, the city council said, yes, we are going to have an election. But then it ran into some legal questions, got pushed back, and we don't know what exactly anyone would vote on if there were to be one at this point.
Yeah, I think it's pretty much down to the wire to get something on a July ballot. I do think it was important for mayor and council to be clear that that's under serious consideration. And while the timing may not be July, it's important to put those thoughts in front of the public sooner rather than later so that folks know what the thinking is.
And this would essentially be part of a choice by the city to go its own way as far as not taking part in a renewal of the RTA, to fund transportation and some other things separately just inside the city, if it were to take place.
Yeah, I mean, I think our role is both, right? So our role is to make sure that we participate in regional partnerships that benefit Tucson and the entire valley, not or the entire valley. It has to really take care of the residents and constituents we represent. And at the same time, we have priorities that we need to engage our own residents on separate from regional. So I don't see it as an either or. I think that we passed a road repair bond. Mm-hmm. That wasn't presuming that we were going to not be part of the regional RTA Next. So they're two parallel tracks in my mind. Having said that, you know, we recognize that that measures are more or less likely to pass depending on how many taxes folks have agreed to.
Yeah.
It's a dynamic process on parallel tracks.
Certainly, when I'm driving around, both inside the city limits and outside, pretty much across every jurisdiction, there are a lot of streets and roads that are just not in good shape, even after all of this catch-up work we've been doing for the past, you know, well, with the RTA, that's, you know, new roads for the past 20 years, in the city, catch-up work for the past decade.
Yeah.
Are we ever going to catch up?
Well, you know,
we ever going to have good streets?
You know, yes, I think we will. The challenge is, can we keep good streets? And I'm stumped by why once we pave a road and we have a few tough rains and a lot of heat, they fall apart again.
It seems like a lot of the new ones don't last very long.
Well, and
it?
that's what I wonder about. And I just wonder if there are, if our can we work with our transportation department? Are there different methods? Are there different materials? Are there ways, anything that we're missing? Because that's really key, right? We go back in, we fog seal to try and preserve, mm-hmm. But are we really testing and implementing the best practices to make the roads last? That's frustrating for all of us.
Keep slapping Band-Aids on things, right?
Well, right, and when you drive by a pothole and the plug that used to be in it is right next to it, that's so frustrating. And there's a double hazard, right? Yeah. There's a pile of asphalt and there's a hole. And why didn't that asphalt stay in the repair spot?
Yeah.
We need to do better on that.
That comes down to money.
Yep.
And that brings us to the budget question, which, you know, you guys have swollen up with COVID aid. You've had a lot of some of the infrastructure money coming out of the Biden administration. Mm-hmm. And that's starting to dry up.
Mm-hmm.
And we had some changes in state law with a flat tax that's going to reduce the amount of money that's coming to the city.
Right.
So it sounds like you have some pretty hard choices coming up. Are you thinking of areas where you think we're going to have to tighten our belts in these spots?
I'm definitely poring over the budget and focused on it. I do want to put it in perspective. The budget for 2025 is already balanced, and then we have a $40 million hole over the subsequent 2 years, which does not sound good. But in 2009, 2010, we had $40 million deficits, $50 million deficits in several years when the economy was crashing around us. And we navigated it. It was awful. We had to make really difficult choices, including some layoffs. This is nothing like that. And I know the budgets very well. And I know that it has to do with the numbers on the page and the underlying assumptions that drive those numbers and some levers that don't always show up on the page. So I had a great conversation with the city manager, and I'm catching up on what has already been vetted in terms of cutting the fat and filling those deficits. It's also not a structural deficit per se. The flat tax hits us hard, but if you look at the trajectory over a 5-year period without any additional solutions, the gap in our revenues and expenses closes. So that's really good news too. I'm not overly concerned. I think we need to take some actions, but I will get there. I have absolutely no doubt.
Do you think the revenue assumptions that are in those forecasts are conservative? You know, playing it a little bit safe and assuming that we, you know, won't get very much money, and we could possibly get a little bit more?
Well, you know, the manager was right to point out that some of them are kind of, the state just says, this is what you're going to get based on what they've already kind of tallied up. So some of them are real hard numbers, but there are other things like intergovernmental and partnership agreements that we have that will be renegotiated over the coming couple years. And there are some potential sources of revenue that we can look at, I think we'll be all right.
So you're looking at right now a $20 million annual shortfall over 2 years after next year, basically, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I think it goes. It's about
15,
yeah.
And
exactly, it adds up to 40 over 2 years.
That's nothing like what you were looking at when you were on the council back in 2008, 2009, 2010 during the Great Recession, when the bottom just fell out of everything and all the money went away. Right.
Right. Right. Right. So there's So I think we'll get there. I really do think we'll be okay. And I'm concerned. I mean, I know that there's a lot of discussion, and there should be, about not balancing it on the backs of our employees. And I know the mayor and council doesn't want that to be the place that we look to get through this. I also am frustrated that transit is such a focus, because yes, it's true. Transit is free, and it should be. There's enormous value on all kinds of folks in this city and all kinds of economic and other drivers that make that a very good investment. And quite frankly, it's better for our Teamsters drivers who aren't having to collect fares and monitor all of that. But we just need to make sure that we're clear about how the budget has changed, because the world has changed after COVID. There's a lot that's different about not just the budget, but how we live our lives in this community, and how we can reflect that in the budget.
There were some concerns during the last election cycle from Teamster leadership about the free buses and concern for some of the things that were happening on the buses and the safety of the drivers, et cetera. And do you think there is a legitimate issue with folks or drivers being concerned about having people just climb on the bus who are going to cause some kind of trouble since it's free?
I haven't met with the Teamsters yet. I definitely want to hear the specifics of those concerns. I believe that drivers are better protected than historically in terms of an enclosed enclosure around the driving area, but I have to confirm that. And the concern that I did see, and I'm not saying it's the only one, is that folks might get on and just ride the bus all day because it's cool, right? And if folks don't have a place to go. I think there are already some strategies that we just need to really continue to build upon, and we'll have funding to build upon. For example, Kodak has an outreach team to reach homeless folks with addiction or mental illness, and they go out in the washes, and they go into camp areas, and they respond to neighborhood concerns. I think that adding some on the buses is a great idea, so that people are available, not just to kind of make sure folks don't ride the bus too long, but that they engage them in help.
Meet them where they are.
That's the phrase, and I think it's real. I mean, I do. So I think, again, I think we just have to continue to solve for what the concerns are, and I think they're valid.
It's a deeply tangled issue, and we only have a couple of minutes left. But since you bring it up, the kind of interwoven problems around homelessness and people's healthcare and mental health care issues, drug addiction, petty crimes, that's affecting the daily lives of a number of ordinary folks across our city, as well as the people who end up caught in those unfortunate situations.
Yeah.
And the city's been undertaking a whole lot of initiatives to try and work on this.
Yeah.
What's working well from your point of view? What maybe needs to be changed up?
Well, as you know, it's happening here and everywhere across the country.
Yeah, we're not
and
special in this case,
no,
right?
No, and much of what the mayor and council are implementing with the staff are evidence-based practices based on the best models from around the country. And they do seem to be moving the needle. It's just we need to do it more and continue to build on that approach. And I think the partnership with TPD and Chief Kazmar and a very wide range of partners like Kodak to reach folks with addiction or mental illness, we have to build on that and bring people, meet them where they're at, bring resources that really can take them to the next level.
And that brings us right back around to the budget issue, of course. You only have so much capacity, right?
Yeah. While at the same time, when the issues become state and federal issues, what you see is investment at the federal and state issue. And I have to say the city's track record in drawing down federal and state money beyond COVID and ARPA and all those pots to this day is unprecedented.
I think we're rapidly running out of time, but I know one thing that has been controversial in downtown redevelopment are these, I believe the word is GPLET, the property tax abatements that help developers get the financing together for their projects. What are your thoughts on the use of these GPLETs?
You know,
GPLETs.
GPLETs, right. My recollection, and I do need to study up because I've been gone for a few years, is that we added in, I think it was in 2021, again, community benefits agreements that ride with GPLETs. There's always an analysis behind any GPLET to demonstrate that any tax abatements will be far exceeded by revenues generated from the project that could otherwise not pencil out. So I think it depends on the GPLET, but I'm not opposed to it. I think we need levers for economic development. I think it's okay for us to partner in order to make things work. I mean, I'll give you a perfect example. The Ronstadt Transit Center is an incredibly complex project that still is on the It's not in the ground or even coming up off the ground. I want to know why, and I want to know what those barriers are, and I want it done because it will benefit transit riders and that whole part of downtown and the entire region, I believe.
So it's a case-by-case basis, but they don't inherently give you heartburn.
Exactly.
Okay.
All right. I think we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you very much to the newest member of the Tucson City Council from Ward 6. Now, Karen Ulick, we really appreciate you stopping by and spending some time with us here on the Buckmaster Show.
Thank you.
And we will be right back after these messages.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade. Using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
And we are back here on the Buckmaster Show, here on The Voice, 1030 KVOI, from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Many thanks to the brand newest member of the Tucson City Council from Ward 6, Councilmember Karen Ulick, for stopping by, answering some questions. She's only been back on the job for just a couple of days, so still digging into things, but of course was on the council for... remind me, Jim Nintzel, when was Ulick first elected to the council? 2005?
If Nintzelpedia is correct, I believe it was 2005 and three terms after that.
And then
Paul Durham
left office and then got back in office, appointed for a short bit, and has now been appointed yet again.
Yes. Yeah. So I think when we saw the council discussing it at the meeting, what they said was they wanted somebody, given the challenges that the city is facing, who was not going to be doing on-the-job training. And they wanted somebody who wasn't going to try to run for the office. And so...
I think that was the key for a lot of them, that they wouldn't give a leg up to an incumbent to run again.
And, yes, you know, which is something we've seen recently in one instance at the county as well. And it seems to be something, although it's not a... I would not say it's something they're following in every appointment, because clearly they didn't follow it with the appointment of the treasurer. But yes, I think when the council members were discussing this, they were saying, let's get somebody in there who has the experience, who can get up to speed very quickly, and also will not be running. So Karen fit the boxes, I think, for clear. Well, I think she wasn't necessarily the top choice of everyone on the council, but at the end of the day, everybody felt that they should support her.
Confident in working with her again?
Yeah. Yes.
We're kind of seeing what was for a long time called the Pima County way fade away a little bit, both at the county and the city. Appointees, you know, being like the chosen favorite of the person leaving office, somebody setting up their handpicked successor to be the somebody who runs again after an appointment and hangs on to the office for a long, long time. We've seen many appointees across both government bodies. You know, become longtime incumbents, another member of the council.
On the other hand, we've seen him also lose.
True.
You know, I think Paul Cunningham is the only person who got appointed to the Tucson City Council, who then got elected to the Tucson City Council. And we're seeing people get appointed to the job who are running for the job, as we did with the treasurer.
Yeah.
And the treasurer, I think, for the supervisors, the argument they seem to be making in the three votes for Chris Ackerley for that gig was that he had literally been brought on to be the successor of
had the
of
experience, knew what was going on,
and was trained to understand what is a very complicated office. It's not just somebody sitting back there with an abacus, you know, knocking some things around and trying to figure out what money goes into what account. It's a very technical oriented job. So it'll and Chris Ackerley is a Republican. He is running for the office this year. I think Beth Ford wanted to give him a leg up by retiring early, but it's going to be hard for a Republican to win in Pima County this year, I think.
You've been doing a lot of digging, research, backgrounding about the folks running for office right now, looking at their campaigns, how things are playing out as far as this upcoming primary, which is a much earlier primary this year, in end of July rather than an August primary.
Yeah, it used to be end of August. It used to be early September, so it really has slid.
So are we seeing any kind of pattern for the primary candidates across local offices?
The thing we're seeing, I think, more than any other is that most of the candidates running for office this year don't have a whole lot of money. And in some races, you'll have just one candidate who has a lot of money and a lot of other candidates that don't. And I'm not saying that money will decide every election, but I would say that the more money you have, the better you have the opportunity to get your name out there to voters who may not know who you are. And building that name ID is a pretty crucial part. And so
especially for more down ballot races, which we have a ton of this year, right?
We do. So I think that's the one. You look at the District 3, where there's an open seat on the Pima County Board of Supervisors, and Jennifer Allen, the Democrat in that race, had raised, I think somewhere in the neighborhood. I may be off here. You can go to the Sentinel
We're scribbling on a napkin at this point. So
go to the Sentinel and get the exact figures. Yes. But I think she had raised somewhere in the neighborhood of $70,000, and it was just head and shoulder. I don't think anybody else had raised more than 10. So
in the Democratic primary.
In the Democratic primary. Yeah. And you know, that primary is in about, the early voting starts in about 6 weeks. So not much time for people to really establish themselves with name ID. And
where money comes from is also kind of an indicator. If somebody is getting, you know, a number of contributions from people all over the place, you know, across our community, rather than, you know, a couple of big checks, they kind of assess their support differently?
I do. I think it shows a much broader support and a much not only a broader support among people who are willing to write checks, but also better campaign organization. I mean, if that person's able to get those checks from across a community like that, they've probably been working hard to build their bona fides up in many ways in the community.
And he wasn't able to join us today because he's off reporting again. But I think some kudos are due to our senior reporter, Paul Ingram, for his work last night at the protest at the University of Arizona. He stayed up all night long reporting on this.
He really did. He got tear gassed. I don't know if he was one of the people struck with the projectiles that were being fired.
Wouldn't be the first time, but
no. But boy, that guy was on it. It pulled an all-nighter. I was well asleep by the time the tear gas started raining down on them, and just a great report this morning, right away to let folks know what happened.
It's hard to talk about photos on the radio, of course, but you can check out the Sentinel, our top local story right now about those U of A protests, and he has some just amazing photography from last night.
Paul is such an astonishing treasure for this community as a reporter. The guy does so well when he's covering.
He can write. He can take photos.
He's covering the border like nobody else.
He's in a congressional border hearing right now.
He is trying to stay awake. Instead of taking a nap, he got right back to work today. And stuff he does on criminal justice, the guy is just, he's a wealth of knowledge, a fantastic reporter, a outstanding photographer. I can't really say enough good stuff. I feel like he sets a standard that I have trouble keeping up with, honestly.
Well, you're all right yourself. I mean, I don't want to brag on you into your face. You have been digging a lot of that political stuff, and we've got some stories just about ready to drop about the sort of stuff you were just talking about, correct?
Yeah, we do, and we've got some debates coming up.
Oh, yes. Tell us about that.
We should probably mention the Arizona Media Association has teamed up with Clean Elections. Clean Elections does debates for
the government agency,
the legislative races and the statewide races, but they've never dipped their toe into local races or congressional races. So this year, the Arizona Media Association has teamed up with Clean Elections to expand the scope of their mission, and we'll be doing some. Includes the Pima County attorney's race, which is of great interest.
And you're going to be a moderator in a number of these.
I am. Yeah, I'm very, very humbled to be joining.
You've got plenty of experience in that respect. So.
I've done it once or twice. But
yes, so we need to take a quick break here, but we will be right back with Dan Gibson and Weekend Watch. Tell us about some cool stuff going around town this weekend.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter.
please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show here on KVOI, broadcasting from the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. I'm Dylan Smith from the Tucson Sentinel. I'm filling in for Bill, who's on a taking a few days off, and congrats to him for taking a break. Sticking around is our Sentinel government and political impact reporter, Jim Ninsel. Thanks for taking some time away from digging into all those stories and helping me out today, Jim.
Always a delight.
And, of course, we'll be joined in a second by Dan Gibson with the Weekend Watch. But I got to tell you about Silver City. Our friends in Silver City and Grant County are ready to welcome you back with open arms. It's just 3 hours east of Tucson. There's so much to do in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, including hiking in the Gila National Wilderness, where there's plenty of social distancing, and visiting the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. For a complete listing of the many things to do and great places to stay, visit southwestnewmexico.org. So, Dan Gibson, what's cool going on in Tucson this weekend that's a little bit closer to home for those who haven't made plans to for a road trip?
You know, just as a note, I was, you know, as I try to keep my fingers on the pulse of what's happening in Silver City. And on May 24th, Friday, there's a group playing at Little Toad Creek called the Rudy Boy Experiment. Little disappointed it wasn't a ska band. Going to be honest.
That sounds like it's got to be a little pick-me-up, right?
Rudy can't
fail. No, not at all. Literally none. No, none of it. But back to Tucson. You know, it's Mother's Day this Sunday. I don't know if people are aware of that.
Wait,
it sneaks
what?
Up on you.
Yeah, thanks.
No, 100%. Thank you. Absolutely.
Good reminder.
Yeah, you got it. Tomorrow at 2 p.m., you could head over to Dragoon Brewing Company, which is something I just would do anyway. But also, it's a Mother's Day bouquet workshop. So you can buy a ticket online, you can learn how to make a beautiful flower arrangement, and get a pint of your choice. So, I mean, it's pretty much a pretty solid deal all the way around. Just go to Dragoon's website. They have tickets on there. It's at 2 p.m. Tickets are $50, but, I mean, it does include a pint. So
beers and blooms.
Yeah, well done. That's a good headline for something like that. It seems like you've done that before.
I may have written a headline or two in my life.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. So let's say you want to skip the whole thing. You don't really want to feel like making a bouquet. You just want to book a brunch. May I suggest Locale Neighborhood Italian, which is at 60 North Alvernon Way, Sunday from 3 a.m. to 3 a.m. Or, geez, that would be really crazy. 9 a.m. to 3 p.m.
Yeah.
They have a special brunch.
That's a very special brunch.
I don't know what people do with their moms. Yeah, no, I mean, listen, that would be the brunch at the buffet, actually, would be probably more likely to
there
be
you
at
go.
That time. Celebrating all those who mother, it says. So, I mean, I think that even includes, like, sometimes the kids say, like, that's mother. Like, those people are also invited. So
excellent.
You can just look at the menu on their website, learn more about all they have going on.
Did you say that was
Locale? Dylan, were you going to say?
Did you say Locale? Is that the correct?
I don't really know how people
pronunciation. I don't either.
What do you say? Locale?
I thought it was Locale, but Locale sounds classier. I mean,
it sounds classier.
When we were going to have lunch there, we couldn't figure out. We were like mixed up.
Dylan?
We were going to two different places.
I would go with Locale probably.
I have to go by there just to find out.
Sounds nice. Yeah, swing by and you'll give us the definitive answer the next time you're on the air.
It's a lovely patio.
You're hosting, right, Jim? Soon?
Next from Monday, Wednesday. Yeah.
Let us know.
I'm a vacationing Buckmaster.
Sorry, Dan.
No.
Dan has actual stuff to tell us.
One of you
here
is about to ask me on Saturday night what it would be a nice night for. Right? One of you were going to say,
of course,
Saturday. That sounds like a nice night for.
Okay,
I'll do
fighting?
It. It's a nice
fighting?
Night for a white wedding. A white wedding.
Oh, a white wedding.
The Idols playing at Ava Amphitheater. Yes. So Saturday, March, May 11th. Jeez, my brain is screwed up today. Saturday, May 11th, 8 p.m., Billy Idol will be at the Ava Amphitheater. He'll be playing probably just Generation X songs, I think, is my understanding.
No solo material, right? Just Gen X tunes?
None whatsoever. Just classic hits out of the Generation
X. If I can't get my wife to go, I'll go there and dance with myself.
Yes, exactly. Oh, look at that.
Well done.
Other musical options. Tomorrow at 8 p.m., Devotchka at the Rialto Theater, always an excellent show. You get an acoustic set from Zixa as the opener. Tickets are available $27.50 to $34.50 on the Ticketmaster.
How much
time you got? You got more?
We are rapidly running up against the time clock here, Dan. Sorry. But
Chris Isaak, tonight, Fox Theater, if you have another thing to do. There you go.
Boom. Thank you so much.
Dan Gibson.
Weekend Watch with Dan Gibson. A great interview with City Council Member Karen Ulick. Jim Nintzel from the Sentinel stopping by. I have been Dylan Smith from the Tucson Sentinel filling in for Bill Buckmaster. Got to let you folks know that the Buckmaster Show is produced by Bill Buckmaster Communications LLC, which is solely, wholly responsible for its content. And so on behalf of me, Dylan Smith from the Sentinel, Bill, Rosemary Brandt, the entire team here at Bustos Media, and engineer and producer, the man behind the glass, Tom Fairbanks, have a wonderful and very safe weekend. Take care, folks. Thank you.